Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our host will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our host will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Oh, I have a feeling we're going to have some fun tonight.
All right.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network, discussing all things Star Wars animation. And we are here tonight to discuss Episode 21 of Season 4, Brothers, and the return of Darth Maul. And joining me, as they have on the last two, while we eagerly awaited Darth Maul's return, are Jerry.
Hey, everybody, it's Jerry here.
Arnie.
You know, when Lucas said at Celebration 5 that Savage Opress was Darth Maul's brother, I kind of thought he meant like brother, the way I consider you guys all my brothers. Nope, it's actual kinship. Happy to be here.
And Nathan.
Hey guys, good to be back. I am shocked that we just made it to the introductions without anyone using the word sinister. Well, till now.
Oh, I was saving it for something special. That seemed, that word was the secret word for the episode. When you heard it, you were supposed to scream. Because everybody was dropped it in.
Oh boy, did I scream.
I was expecting like a crossover with X-Men or something. You know, Nathaniel Exis steps out of the background with Apocalypse behind him to face off against Savage and Maul. But no, it didn't happen.
No, that would have been a much more intriguing episode.
Alrighty. Before we reveal too much, just incidentally, let's go ahead and get everyone's thoughts. Though, if you've been paying attention and keeping score at home, you might be able to figure it out already. Let's go around and we'll start with Jerry. Jerry, what did you think of this week's episode?
Well, I felt like I was watching a show that could have been royally condensed. I mean, everything that happened in this episode could have easily been the opening segment of the show before, or I should say of a different show before you got to the commercial break. I mean, I just actually feel like I absolutely wasted my time. The best part of this week's episode was the preview for next week's episode, which I'm pretty excited about, but this was just such a drag. I mean, we literally watched a Savage Opress just walk across a planet.
All right. Arnie?
I'll agree with the words Jerry said, but not the inflection that he used. I would say this episode was over far too quickly and really left me at the edge of my seat. I enjoyed everything that happened, but was very frustrated more didn't happen. And if ever there was a time for the Clone Wars to not end on a 1 hour, two episode finale, this wasn't it. Had this been a 1 hour extravaganza, I bet a lot more people wouldn't feel like Jerry does. But for me, this was an unsatisfying tease, but yet still teasing something that I'm really looking forward to, if that makes sense. So I enjoyed it, but was just really frustrated by how little of it there was.
Well, Arnie, you're not wrong.
All right, and Nathan.
You know, I'll agree with Jerry and his inflection. I really felt like I was watching an episode of the Tartakovsky series. You know, you have the long-necked characters, the oddly long faces, the stilted quick dialogue to get it all fit in, and enough story to maybe fill about 5 minutes. While I'm very interested in where this goes, and as much as the American accent thing bothers me a little bit for Maul, Whitworth's performance from, you know, the babbling, he refers to it as, in an interview, as the Gollum nature of the way that he makes Maul talk as he's first sort of coming out of his bizarre, haunted 10 years down in the tunnels kind of state. It really intrigues me, that kind of performance, and I want to see where this goes. But yeah, Jerry's right. This could have been the part between the opening narration and the first commercial break, and we could have gotten more, you know, actual story in this episode that we just didn't get. It had a lot of cool little elements, but this should not have been stretched as long as it was. This should not have been an episode in and of itself. Even if they were doing, as Arnie says, a two-episode finale. I still don't think this part of it should have been dragged out as much as it was. Star Wars is known for sometimes having kind of screwy pacing where certain parts of the stories drag. This is a perfect example of that in cartoon form, which we usually don't see with the Clone Wars. All of a sudden, it wasn't flash-bang, it was flash, 10-minute pause, bang. Didn't work for me.
All right.
Guys. Haven't you heard of building atmosphere?
Yes, I just don't need 22 minutes to build the atmosphere. It was a waste.
Oh, boy. We're going to be going round and round and round and round.
No, hey, you know, of the things that happened, I liked. You know, Savage getting there and finding Darth Maul was kind of wicked cool. It just took him 15 minutes to get there.
We'll take something like last week, right? Last week's episode, we talked about how it was essentially sort of a filler episode, but it had those moments that needed to happen to move Asajj Ventress's character forward. So it has its moments, continuity-wise, as far as pushing the characters, but at the same time, the filler story that those moments are built into was in and of itself entertaining. This episode tried to do a similar thing. A few little bits here and there that needed to push things forward, and yet the filler story that those were plopped into barely existed. I think that's what the issue is here. It's not an episode that is fulfilling in and of itself as you know, the Star Wars fix for the week. There's not much there.
There. Well, I'm actually going to side with Nathan and Jerry on this one.
Oh.
Sorry. You know,
sorry, Artie, maybe you are wrong.
A2, Dan, A2.
Well, yes, and it's for this reason. For 3-4 seasons now, we've had a lot of episodes where I know that I've complained where we flashed through a lot of stuff in a newsreel, and we never see hide nor hair of it again, and we accept it and we go on. 2/3 of this episode could have been shown to me in a newsreel, and I would have been fine. Savage starts a fight in a diner, goes in the back room, finds some dust, leads him to a junk planet, walks to the junk planet, finds his brother in a cave. End of newsreel. Give me 5 minutes of him reuniting with Darth Maul, and then we've got 15 more minutes of good story to go.
Instead, magical dust. Darth Maul is hunted by his brother Savage Opress. Magical dust leads him there. Insert Morley.
Pretty much. See. Now, I did enjoy some of the stuff on the junk planet. The fire eaters, the annoying snake, the junkers. That was all entertaining, but they were not essential to this story. Last week we complained it looked like it was just going to be a filler episode, and I really ended up enjoying that one. This one, which I really expected to enjoy, felt like just a filler episode.
Hey, I loved the junk planet, Lotho Minor, and the Junkers the first time I saw it, when it was called Raxus Prime in The Force Unleashed.
I know there was a lot of people wondering if it was the same planet.
Nah, it's not. It's not. It's just a very similar design here, but to their credit, Dave Filoni, when doing things as far as directing Sam Witwer on how to approach Maul, a lot of times it was, well, you remember with The Force Unleashed, Starkiller did this, and he was able to sort of build off of that. So I think to have that there that really feels like it's a very similar concept, it may have been an intentional nod here. I mean, it definitely shows between that and what Witwer said that Filoni understood the nature of The Force Unleashed and was tapping into it at least somewhat for this episode. Bizarre little connection, but it may be intentional.
Well, I could understand that. But before we get too far afield with pondering what Filoni and crew may have meant, let's get into what they actually did give us, that we know they gave us, because we saw it, some of us, more than once.
I actually have one quick question before the plot even begins.
Okie daisies.
When the Clone Wars logo comes in, it's red. Has it ever been red before?
Rise of the Bounty Hunters, finally, baby! Wait, no, wrong.
It's never
wrong.
Been
that was two seasons ago. No, it's new. It's on purpose for this episode and the next one.
I thought that was very cool. I understand why they do it the normal way before, but after having bought figures on red cards for the better part of a year, and of course now they've gone away from the red cards, but the logo's finally red, I thought it was striking. It told me in the first millisecond, you're in for something different.
You know, I only passively noticed that now that you mention it. Yeah, I remember seeing it red and thinking that's different, but we jumped right into action so fast, I didn't really have time to think about that.
Yeah, well, it jumped out at me mainly because that is actually a favorite color combination of mine in terms of, like, I've bought cars simply because it was black with red leather interior. You know, I love that color combination. So when it was the black screen with the red lettering like that, it really jumped out to me, and it was so obvious Darth Maul. So it was cool that they did that, just to put a little, you know, a little twist to even some of the visuals, just to kind of get you in the mode a little bit.
So we first go to Count Dooku's palace, and there we get the first speaking of the secret word for this episode. Count Dooku is talking to Grievous and says that he feels something sinister. It is nice to see that those boils have cleared up.
One thing I do have to wonder about that, and I know they did this on purpose, you know, to build momentum for this idea that we're going to see Maul, you know, Savage is going to find him and such, is it just seems like it's unusual that characters are going to sense something with such clarity throughout the Force. I mean, it must be whispering the word sinister, for instance, to Obi-Wan and Dooku, but you've got Dooku senses it, Asajj senses it, which sort of makes sense because of Savage and his tie-in to everything. Obi-Wan sensing it, and Yoda sensing it to the point where Yoda can even say who it is that he's sensing. And it's before the two have even met, at least as far as when Dooku and Asajj are first sensing it. It seems just like it's kind of overblown compared to what we've seen otherwise within the series of being able to actually sense major events or major machinations by the villains, especially before they actually do much of anything. Wasn't it kind of over the top?
It was a little bit in that everybody was feeling it. I mean, it's not like they just thawed him out of cryo or I took him out of carbon freeze. He's been roaming around for 10 years. Why they are feeling him now, and it's not because Savage and him have met. Well, with Obi-Wan and Yoda it is, but with Asajj and Dooku and Anakin even, they haven't even met up yet when they're having these rumblings. So it is a little bit weird that all of a sudden everybody's tail is tingling about Darth Maul.
Well, yeah, it's not like this was the explosion of Alderaan that people are feeling. I mean, I thought that was a little odd as well.
Or is it? I mean, the reuniting of these two super force powerful Zabrak brothers could conceivably, if unchecked, be as devastating as the fall of Alderaan. We see in the trailer for next week, and we hear in this episode, Maul wants revenge over Obi-Wan. Imagine the entire Star Wars saga if Maul were to kill Obi-Wan, who would stop Anakin and knock him into the lava and make him less powerful and put him on a respirator. So always in motion is future, but this could be, we know it's not, but it could be in a butterfly effect kind of way, the beginning of the end.
Lovely theory, Arnie, but the fact is nothing's happened yet for them to sense. I mean, Alderaan was past tense. Obi-Wan didn't have that feeling on Mos Eisley or something like, oh, wow, you know, I think there's a big death ball that's crawling up to Alderaan. We're running out of time. Let's go. No, it was post, you know, event. So, you know, it's fine for this show. I mean, I guess you could argue you've got more, let's say, aware characters like a Dooku who is very much aware that there's a Savage Opress out there. He just about got his life force taken from him from Mother Talzin. So maybe he's very hyper aware and looking for, hey, where's Talzin? Are there any more Night Sisters? Is there, you know, oh, wait a minute, I'm feeling this. So there could be something there. It didn't take me out of the show. It was a nice little setup, actually, before Savage Opress walked across a planet with a snake.
I think I can understand the idea of maybe sort of like it building, kind of like you might see the buildup of a wave before it crashes down or anything like that. I guess it's just a specificity without it being a vision that kind of draws me back. It says that it seems as though it's a little too specific, a little too on point beyond what we've seen before. I mean, even as Jerry said, you know, Alderaan, they sense it after it happens. But even then, Obi-Wan doesn't say, you know, it's as if millions of voices suddenly crowd out in terror because Alderaan got blowed up. Instead, he says, you know, he just senses the men's is they're crying out in terror and suddenly silenced. Well, that's nice and all, but there's no specificity even to that. It's almost like there's a difference between the spider sense version of the Force and actually seeing a vision of something. And while Yoda meditating might have given us a reason for him to be more specific, he might have actually had a vision during meditation. The other characters don't seem to imply any type of meditation, more just like a general feeling of something is coming. And even then, maybe with the personal connection to Obi-Wan, it would make sense if he would feel that with Maul returning. But at least for the light side Jedi, they got that whole thing about how, you know, sensing the future, sensing things happening has been diminished for the Jedi because the shroud of the dark side has fallen and such. And yet again, Obi-Wan is somehow sensing this with some clarity, it seems like. I don't know. It just seemed as though it was over the top, just like for an episode that does so little in the overall scheme of this Maul arc, it seems like, other than just having them meet, I think sort of that red opening Clone Wars image was kind of over the top. It's like they're building up things that aren't realized within the episode.
You know what's kind of interesting that this occurred to me during the episode when Anakin thought Obi-Wan was dead and Obi-Wan took on the form of that bounty hunter. You know, you guys discussed, I wasn't part of that arc, but you guys discussed how would Anakin, who is the closest to Obi-Wan, be so easily fooled? And I think it's the same thing here with Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan's probably one of the last people to sense Darth Maul coming because he saw him die. He is so convinced in his head that, oh no, I cut him in half with a lightsaber, he fell down this shaft. He is so convinced to where he's not even thinking or being open to the fact that the Force could tell him anything different. I think Anakin was the same way a few episodes ago. He's not picking up Obi-Wan because he's so passionately in the belief that Obi-Wan's dead and this guy killed him. So he is so blinded by this, oh, maybe the hatred or maybe Obi-Wan's slightly arrogance. Not that he's denying it, although we kind of see in the preview that he was sort of putting it to the test. We'll get to that later, but he would probably be the last one to catch it.
Now, while everyone is having their little sensing of future events, some other sensing is going on. Savage Opress, after roughing up a waitress, has discovered some boxes with some dust, and his magical locket is glowing. Now, while that's all odd and okay, sure, I'll accept that, what caught me about that whole scene was Mother Talzin, who, first of all, apparently is still alive and not Green Mist anymore, says that it's time to make the preparations. So I have a feeling that Darth Maul's transformation next week is going to have something to do with these preparations. I don't think we're quite rid of the Sith Witch yet.
It has led to some discussion on fandom forums about whether or not Darth Maul's two-legged version of the robotic legs are going to be something that's conjured, like that weapon for Savage Opress back in Season 3, or if it's just that she happens to have something ready, you know, to maybe affect Maul in, as far as bringing back his sanity. Though, having read The Wrath of Darth Maul, that would contradict what they've just recently released if that were to be the case.
So we'll have to wait and see next week what that means. It could just mean that she, who knows? I'm not going to speculate with something stupid. I'll let it go. We will see. So Savage jumps aboard this freighter headed for this junk planet. And of course, we all know the pilot's just on borrowed time. And that's confirmed when he arrives there. And we arrive at Lotho Minor, which, as we discussed earlier, looks a lot like Rex's Prime, which those of you who play The Force Unleashed would recognize. And the first being that greets Savage Opress is a talking snake.
Satan? I'm sorry, you put a talking snake, and I'm going Old Testament here. And am I the only one?
I didn't think that, but my girlfriend thought that when we were watching it. I was immediately thinking, like, the puppetry, because his mouth moves so puppet-like, and somebody else pointed out along the way that it wasn't a new species. I hadn't even thought about the fact that in Deception we had the Anacondan bartender thing. So, a little bit here just wasn't me.
Yeah, that came to my mind, of course, and you know, I didn't put two and two together until a little bit later. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, of course, the talking snake's the one that's deceiving. Yeah, whatever, whatever.
See, I totally didn't go there in retrospect. Huh, should have thought of that, but I didn't. I thought that the personality that they were giving this snake was kind of similar to what Yoda is when we first meet him in Empire Strikes Back, except in the end, it did turn out that the little talky thing was evil and just manipulating the wayward traveler.
It kind of felt to me like they essentially were merging the way that we meet Jar Jar as he constantly follows Qui-Gon, even though Qui-Gon tells him to go away, with what we got with Yoda in that false persona when he first meets Luke. It's like, you know, we want a character that sort of tags along, even though he doesn't want it, like what we got with Jar Jar, except we want to take away some of the gratingness of the way that played out in Phantom Menace and give it something that's a little more easy to accept and possibly even be duped by, like with Yoda from The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, except Yoda.
I liked it.
Yeah, except Yoda, when he first met Luke on Dagobah, said, oh, Jedi Master, take you to him for $50, I will.
Well, see, if he'd said that, it would have obviously been a trap.
Clearly.
So In Savage's trek across Lothal Minor, we meet some of the interesting indigenous things. I don't think I'll refer to them as life forms. I'm pretty sure everything that he met was at least somewhat droid-based. The fire breathers, the junkers.
They're a type of life form that essentially they constantly modify their bodies with cybernetics, at least according to StarWars.com's encyclopedia.
Hey, we're all droids animated series alumni here. Didn't you get a vibe off of something from droids? This felt like weird creatures that would have been in droids, like maybe from the Great Heap or something.
I hadn't thought that, but as soon as you started saying droids, the Great Heap did come to mind.
Yeah, I kind of get Great Heap from the Fire Breathers. I got more, I don't even remember what they were called in that movie, but my kids have been watching Labyrinth on Netflix lately. I got a Labyrinth feel from the Junkers. There's some creatures in that movie that basically pile junk on themselves.
Nobody started singing Dare to be Stupid? Come on. Somebody started singing Dare to be Stupid.
I'm sure you did.
Looking at Jerry.
I didn't go junkions on the planet of junk at all, but I get it. You better squeeze all that charm you can when Mr. Whipple's not around.
And after a very one-sided fight with the junkers and a deluge of acid rain, Oppress is led into a little hut that turns out to be a trap and dropped into some catacombs below the surface of the planet, where at last, after some tracking and some very Return of the King-like moments, he finally meets Darth Maul in his spider body. Now, I know we've heard references to Spider Maul before, Mecha Maul, where he's kind of got multiple legs, but I don't remember it being quite that spidery in any other EU. Nathan, am I wrong on that?
We've only ever seen him, to my knowledge, with just the cybernetic legs from old wounds. Otherwise, it's never been him with some kind of cybernetic, at least not anything that I recall seeing off the top of my head. But can I rewind you for a second? He goes into the hut, and it's like all of a sudden, just by finding nothing more to Maul's trail in the hut, it seems as though he essentially gives up. Like, all of a sudden, after trekking all the way across this planet and essentially across the galaxy looking for his brother, he starts kicking stuff and thinking that, you know, my trail, the trail has ended, I'm never going to find him, I give up. And it really seemed not like Savage to basically say, you know, I give up right before he winds up falling into the trap. You know, it was weird to me.
Well, you know, he trekked across the planet with an annoying snake, got into a couple fights, and then had acid rain drip on him. You know, he had been thinking this day couldn't suck more, and now I'm no closer to finding anything. So I didn't think that was out of character. I didn't take it as a, you know, I give up and like, oh, feel bad for me sort of way, but I could sense the frustration.
But to go all emo kid over it, I mean, he just seems like he goes a little overboard with this thing. I mean, maybe it's just the fact that ever since he was turned into the hulking Savage Oppress as opposed to the original version that we saw on Dathomir, you know, he's sort of spoken in quicker little bursts and such as opposed to having a lot of dialogue. Maybe it's just a reflection of him just not being able to express it better because of who he is now, but it just seemed like he was taking it, again, like a lot of stuff in the episode, isn't it? Like taking it a little bit over the top to where it would have seemed natural.
Savage smash!
You wouldn't like him when he's angry. As apparently Sassy the waitress figured out. Who is she? She's Sassy. What must kill? No, that's her name. She's not actually meaning to talk back.
It did seem a little odd that he has his little roid rage fit just because, and everyone has betrayed him because his amulet goes off, or stops going off, whichever you prefer to think of it as. It was a little bit juvenile for, I mean, what we've seen Savage do and go through. To have a little tantrum over that does seem a little bit odd and out of place for him.
Yeah, but I gotta give Clancy Brown, the voice actor who does Savage Oppress, who I gave him some praise last year as Savage Oppress, I think he does a great job of it here. I was thinking it's a little out of character, but the performance helped me to go with it a bit.
Oh, the performance is great. Clancy Brown does amazing work. I think all the voices here, even Morley's, very top-notch. But, you can't necessarily get over stilted writing in some cases by just having a really good performance. It's still, he's still acting out of character, even if his voice is right exactly where we'd want it to be. Which I think is going to be a problem that a lot of people are going to have with Darth Maul, with him having the American accent as opposed to English. And Whitworth tries to explain it. I get into that in Continuity Corner, but I think that's another thing. You know, what helps you believe a character is the performance, but it's got to be a believability in the way the character's handled writing-wise, the way he's animated, and the voice. And sometimes they're just not clicking in this episode.
So let's get into Darth Maul as we first see him. He's two-thirds this strange droid spider thing. He's muttering to himself. His horns are all out of control. More than a little creepy, for sure.
You know, Nathan, you already said the thing that was all over my notes. Gollum, 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 Gollum. I mean, if that was his inspiration, I almost want to give it a ding, because you can look at something and say, I want to bring that essence to a role and thus create something unique. Or you can look at something and say, I'm going to rip that off and do the exact same thing. And that's kind of what I thought here.
There was a lot of Lord of the Rings in this one. I just actually finished today watching the extended cut of Lord of the Rings, the whole trilogy, on Blu-ray, finally. And I mean, you get the Shelob thing going on where he's the spider going through the tunnels, as somebody mentioned a moment ago. And you've got the element of essentially magic and such with the amulet in and of itself. And you've got this whole Gollum take on it. What exactly it is that Whitworth says in the interview is, Dave not only said he wanted me to play Darth Maul, but that he wanted to take it in sort of a Gollum direction. When I read the script, I saw what he meant, but also saw that this might be an opportunity to take it in a Colonel Kurtz direction. That's kind of what he does. You know, he's got the crazy Gollum thing going on, but you got to give him credit for ad-libbing some awesome stuff in there, like the Sith Code, which I'll hit in Continuity Corner a bit.
All right, the legs, the spider legs. They're not working for me here. All I kept doing was going back to both the Scorpion King, the original movie, where it was the Rock with a CGI body, or even less of a good analogy, for the five of you who've seen the Lost in Space movie with, like, Joey from Friends, and woohoo! The thing that Commissioner Gordon turns into at the end.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. Guilty. Guilty as charged.
I didn't see the need for the extent on the spider legs. I mean, if they had wanted to nod to the multi-leg Maul, they could have done it without having to do the basically a complete droid spider right down to the abdomen for no reason that I can think of.
It makes no sense to me from a design perspective, and I will go with anything so long as you can give me a logical reason for it. I don't see any logical reason why somebody would be cut in half, live, and then decide those two legs weren't enough. Let me go with six or eight.
See, that begs the question, though, of how does he get the legs? And they've answered that in an interview. I'm going to deal with that in Continuity Corner. I don't want to spoil it here on the off chance they actually explain it next episode. But even with the bizarre and kind of out there reasoning that they do give for why he has those legs, which I really don't buy that much, that in and of itself didn't kick me out of it. I like the whole Spider-Maul thing. I mean, I'm glad that he's not going to stay like that in the future, but it looked freaking creepy. I mean, what else could take away that aspect of humanity to Maul, as he's already babbling and sort of has lost his mind to a degree, than to make him in and of himself, in his physical body, different than humanoid now? It really worked for me, and it was kind of creepy, not so much as, the pedophile last episode, but still kind of creepy.
And my thinking with this, though, is that they needed to explain it. They needed to say last night. Again, I said this on last week's Republic Forces Radio Network. However they explain that he lived is not going to appease me. But they needed to say something. Something had to be said. Instead, they're just like, whatever we say, they're not going to buy anyway. So let's not say anything.
Okay, all they needed, this is what drives me nuts, the Junkers that Savage Opress met up with and fought, why weren't they little kind of spider cyborg like creatures, or it's just something to where, hey, we found him, we fixed him, we gave him those legs, because that's what we do to ourselves, you know. Perfect, done. Don't even need a story. Maybe whatever Nathan's referring to comes, you know, if that comes up and explains it later, okay, fine. I'm open to it later. What's kind of funny, though, being that this is Star Wars, the first thing that I thought of when I saw him was Return of the Jedi, the Bomar monks. And those spidery little bodies with a brain in it. Well, here it was just we only had like half the body and we're throwing the legs on. That's kind of what I got out of it. But yeah, it didn't work for me. It really, when I first saw it, thought, wait a minute, this isn't right. He's only supposed to have two legs. We've even seen that with regards to the promos for Darth Maul. What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. And it was just bizarre. It was bizarre.
Don't worry, Jerry. The reason that they're going to give is far more ridiculous than the one that you just suggested. Oh. So don't worry.
Well, thank goodness.
And to Arnie's point, they have answered, at least to a degree, how he survives not going splat. I don't know if they're going to answer it next week, but if you stay listening, folks, for Continuity Corner later on, it's a spoiler-filled, spoiler-warning Continuity Corner, but I actually go through and give you a bit of a performance, a reading, of that little chunk of The Wrath of Darth Maul that finally explains how it is he doesn't go kersplat on the bottom, or at least the top half doesn't go kersplat.
See, it just struck me odd that Savage was more concerned with how long have you been here? How long have you been here? Rather than how in the crap are you not dead?
Yes, thank you. And that's what I'm like, it would be my first question if I saw my siblings with spider legs.
But wouldn't you have assumed that the question of why is he not dead would have been something that Savage would have been pondering and giving himself essentially answers and rationales for during his entire trip? I mean, this is more of a, you know, all the ways you may have imagined that Maul survived, all the ways you would have imagined finding your brother, to find him like this and to find him here in this situation, babbling the way that he does, you know, down in the dark. You know, that in and of itself is the momentary stimulus that he gets to ask the questions. I could see why that would be the kind of question you would ask, not how did you survive being cut in half, or, you know, how did you get here in the first place? Where did those spider legs come from? I could see him asking, you know, my God, what has happened to you? How long have you been here? What has caused him to fall to this depth of savagery, basically, in the tunnels? That kind of question I could see making sense at the time. Yeah, he's got to ask the other questions, but those may not be the first ones to pop to mind since he's living in the moment.
I would think that the first question would be, brother, what the hell happened to your legs? But you know what? The way Maul was acting, maybe you'd want to start with basic questions and try to talk him down a little bit, because I don't know that he would be in a mindset to give a sufficient answer or a comprehensible one. So maybe starting with something you care less about, but just trying to be like asking someone who got hit on the head, who's the president? Something like that.
Brother, ba weep, grana weep, ninny bomb.
But Savage does manage to kind of get a little bit through the psychosis of Darth Maul and get him to at least the point where he can make a intelligent sentence. And what he gets out of him is that he wants revenge on the Jedi. Who doesn't, really?
Well, and this is where I was just a little disappointed. I didn't want us to find, or Savage or Press to find, Darth Maul just all whack crazy without any directions or understanding, or he's just kind of nuts, right? I wanted Savage or Press to find Darth Maul a lot more coherent, a lot more Sith-like, and saying, oh, brother, you know, finally we're together. The dark side has brought us together, and now it's time to exact my plan. I've been patient, and now's the time. You're here. We can do this together. I was looking more of a, it's about time you got here, let's go, sort of thing. Like Darth Maul knew this was going to happen. You know, something that's just smart.
I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't this. But I was intrigued by the direction it went. And that's the thing I got to say about every episode K.D. Lucas writes, is very rarely does it go the way I expect it to. And that's a good thing usually. But here, it just felt like some fundamentals were skipped, but I don't feel like they're skipped forever because there's next week. And I think that, again, had this been a 1 hour episode, it wouldn't have left me with such an unsatisfied feeling.
If I could give you at least a little glimpse behind the scenes here, again, going back to that same interview as to why he appears the way that he does. And they do acknowledge, you know, if Maul had lived, he would have been part of the Clone Wars. Presumably he could have been a general or something like General Grievous, that Maul must have more going on inside his brain, intelligence-wise, than he's usually given credit for as a simply just a tool, an assassin for the Sith. But as to why he'd show up essentially insane at this point, Witwer, when talking about the direction of the character, says, "We decided that he might be pitiful one moment and dangerous the next, creating this maelstrom of conflicting emotions and unpleasantness. We all have our opinions about who he is, and that creates expectations. So what do? We blow away all expectations and say he's insane. It makes perfect sense. If you're going to be dispatched in the way that he was, there must be a huge consequence for having him come back. He can't just come back with mechanical legs and say, I'm the same old Darth Maul that I ever was. There was a major cost, and it's consistent with the other things we see in the movies." And then he goes into the idea of the dark side being a pathway to many abilities, some would consider to be unnatural, and the desire to cheat death. It seems like this was a purposeful thing, not just a random, well, how are we going to find him? Let's just make him crazy. It seems like this is a purposeful point in his character development, because, I mean, this is a character we're going to see going into season 5. It looks like they're building towards what he could be and what he could, you know, transform into over time. I want to give him at least some credit that they are doing this on purpose with a plan in mind, at least for Maul. Maybe not every bit of the Clone Wars, but at least for Maul.
And to be fair, I'm still open to all that. I know this isn't the end-all, be-all of the Darth Maul story. So even though my expectations were different, I'm not completely dismissing it, even though I still think this show, this one 22-minute episode, seemed like a whole lot of nothing to get nowhere.
See, and here, I just think that I wish that there had been more there, but I liked that they kind of dragged it out and made finding him an event. I liked the snake. I did. I felt a little bad when Savage crushed him. I laughed out loud when he's like, oh, good, I get your leftovers. Oh, he's still alive. And so I was enjoying the ride, but I just want to know why. I just want to know more. I think this story is bigger than the 22 minutes it had could hold. And I keep saying that, but that's all I can keep going back to. It's hard for me to judge this as an episode. I really need to see next week's to see if it gives me what I want. This episode, I liked the atmosphere, though.
At the risk of being labeled as the one knocking the episode, you said this episode seemed like it had more than could be shown in the amount of time that they had. Yeah, but if they had condensed this part down into just before the first commercial break, like it could have been for the story that it gives us, you know, take out some of the walking around, the random encounter with the Jungers, take out him having his temper tantrum before he falls into the trap, we could have gotten more story than we got in this half an hour. I mean, I can buy the whole idea that the story is bigger. It's going on to the next episode. They were airing it as a 1 hour thing. A friend of mine went to one of the Lucasfilm premiere things to see this thing. But, I mean, if you've got that much story to tell, why not deal with the pacing better? I'm betting that next week we're going to see the episode Revenge and say, hey, this was such a great episode. It seemed like they had so much they were trying to do. I can't believe they had to cut it so short. Which will go right back to this, yeah, if they had used this episode better from a time perspective, they wouldn't have had to cut Revenge so short. I bet money on it.
I have a feeling with the way the pacing has gone with this episode that this may actually be a season that ends with a cliffhanger. We may not, we may be stuck waiting to see what happens till after the summer.
You just scared me with the thought that that image of him standing next to the fire talking to Obi-Wan and so you did survive or whatever could actually be the final image we see this season. Thank you so much.
No charge. That's what I'm here for.
And what a big disappointment that would be. I mean, this is really the payoff for the story that we were told last season, the cliffhanger from there, even though it wasn't, you know, obviously a season finale cliffhanger, but there was definitely a cliffhanger in Savage Opress realizing that his brother's out there and seeing kind of that image and saying, oh, I got to go find him. That story was a big cliffhanger. So something big has to happen here. If we already know, and Nathan, this is actually the first time I've heard that, but if we already know that Darth Maul has a presence in season 5, yeah, I'm open to that, but I think we need to have some sort of, you know, major event happen from this. And if it's not Darth Maul and Obi-Wan going round two, I'll be a little upset if we don't see that next week.
Well, I'm being kind of a little facetious to say that it could end on the idea of the flames. We know, based on the description of the episode in Insider, that next week is essentially a two-on-two fight, but who are the two on one side is a little bit shocking, unless you've been paying a lot of attention to things like Darling and Deer ever since the Clone Wars movie. but they do lay out, yeah, he's going to appear in season five, and the way Whitworth talks about it in the interview and Insider makes it sound very intriguing where he's going, but I feel like they may have kind of spoiled a few plot points for season five without meaning to. I'm surprised it actually saw print with some of the details we get of where Maul's going beyond this next episode. So if you want to read the spoilers, folks, pick up Insider, but that's not going to show up even in Continuity Corner. It's too far ahead.
I don't need to listen to Continuity Corner for the spoilers. I just got spoilers, Nathan. Thank you. I've been paying attention since the Clone Wars movie. I know what you're talking about.
Well, of course, it's also in the TV guide description and such. It's not like it's a big shocker.
So our episode ends with Obi-Wan entering Yoda's meditation chamber and them having a discussion where Yoda reveals that, once again, something sinister. And even more to the point, the Sith that killed Obi-Wan's master is coming back to haunt them once again. That Yoda could be that specific, being how he never had any one-on-one contact with Darth Maul ever, was a little surprising.
Maybe Nathan knows. I don't know. Maybe Yoda saw him dragging off entrails behind him, and Yoda's like, a taller pair of legs these are. Use them, I must.
Darth Maul's like crawling away as like the Terminator going into the Smasher. Now, it does seem kind of odd that he'd be able to point it out, but then again, I mean, this is the only Sith we've seen killed, at least, you know, that Yoda would have personal knowledge of to a degree. I think the thing that's getting people about this was the fact that they were able to pick up the oh, he's Darth Maul, and there are people on various message boards griping about the fact that, you know, how would the Jedi have known his name? It's not like they knew it from, you know, Dooku or whomever they could have run into, but they forget, you know, that Newt Gunry was locked up for quite a while, as were some of the other Nemoidians, and Sidious had introduced him as, you know, this is my apprentice, Darth Maul. He will find your lost ship. So some of the critiques about, you know, how specific he and Obi-Wan together could be in naming the enemy, some of those are unfounded. But yeah, the ability to be that specific, little tricky, unless, of course, it's a vision, because Yoda was meditating, unlike what appears to happen with these others, where they just sort of get a gut feeling. I can buy it, at least for Yoda.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with Obi-Wan actually knowing his name, even though they never introduced each other. I mean, yeah, that's exactly where my thought went, that, you know, Newt Gunray and the Nemoidians, they knew his name, and Newt looks like a squealer, so I'm sure any kind of pressure, and he just told everything he knew to the Jedi, so that doesn't bother me at all.
And maybe they've got his legs in a jar somewhere. Maybe there was like a name tag at the bottom of his cuff of his pants.
Sewn in the tag of his underwear like in camp.
Wow, guys, look at this. Obi-Wan Kenobi defeated a guy named Calvin Klein.
Now, as we've already hinted at, this episode played Harry Carey with certain points in continuity and raised a few issues of its own. So to take us down the treacherous path that this week is Continuity Quarter, Nathan?
Okay, folks, it's time for an unusual Continuity Corner. Due to what it takes to truly get to the nature of the Darth Maul character's development over the last few months, this Continuity Corner receives a spoiler warning. Spoilers will be included that refer to the old Star Wars Tales stories Phantom Menaces and Resurrection, the Star Wars Visionaries story Old Wounds, and several recent releases, including the Darth Plagueis adult novel by James Luceno, The Wrath of Darth Maul, the latest biographical Star Wars book by Ryder Windham, and two new short stories by Luceno, Restraint, found in the newest re-release of the Darth Maul Shadowhunter paperback novel, and Endgame, from the paperback reissue of the novelization of The Phantom Menace. The good news is that beyond this continuity corner, this episode of Republic Forces Radio Network ends. You can quit listening now and pick up next week's without missing any major content except for Continuity Corner. You've been suitably warned. The Darth Maul character, played by Ray Park and voiced by Peter Serafinowicz in The Phantom Menace, has been somewhat underused as a film character until recently, outside of film adaptations or brief mentions only of his film exploits in sources like the Episode I journals for Anakin Skywalker and Padme Amidala, Maul was originally given primary focus in Darth Maul Shadowhunter by Michael Reeves, which is a lead-in to The Phantom Menace, Darth Maul Saboteur by James Luceno, which was an ebook tie-in to Shadowhunter, the Darth Maul comic book miniseries in which he takes on Black Sun, Jedi Council Acts of War, a comic series where he instigates a crisis that helps lead into Ki-Adi-Mundi joining the Jedi Council, the Episode 1 Adventures Young Reader RPG tie-in book, The Fury of Darth Maul, which includes his droid C-3PX that also appears in the droids comics by Dark Horse, and his own Episode 1 journal. Together, these unquestionably in-continuity stories gave us tiny snippets of Maul's background, but not much beyond how his actions cleared the stage for Episode 1. Little was brought to light about his background. These were all also stories released around the time of Episode 1 being in theaters and then on home video, which has left him little used until recently. The amulet that Savage got from Talzin to help him find Maul is set up in the Restraint short story, a tale repeated in The Wrath of Darth Maul, both recent releases. In that story, 15-year-old Maul has been training at the Orsus Academy under the Fallen Trezza. During one of his last trials, he's captured by Mother Talzin and other Night Sisters who are trying to find the lost son of fellow Night Sister Kaisina. When they are all betrayed upon arrival at Orsus Orbital Station, Maul must work with the Night Sisters to escape. When Darth Sidious arrives, Talzin recognizes his power and allows Maul to rejoin him, but not before swiping the amulet along Maul's bloody arm, creating a connection between him and the amulet, similar to other blood-tracking force abilities in the Star Wars Expanded Universe. Incidentally, Maul had thus exposed his own force use to his fellow trainees against Sidious's wishes, and had to return to Orsus to kill everyone at the academy, including a girl who had taken a fancy to him. The revelation to Maul by Talzin in Restraint that he is a Night Brother, formerly of Dathomir, is but one of several instances in recent EU materials to give a bit more doubt in Maul's mind as to his purpose, a thread rarely seen before. The new tale Endgame follows Maul in events during the Phantom Menace, but includes new instances of Maul helping track and wipe out Gungan settlements during portions of the film where we don't see him much. He is, in fact, even present at the Gungan sacred place to witness the meeting between the Naboo and Gungans, providing him insight into what the Trade Federation will soon face. During the course of the story, while seeking out information, he runs into the former head of security for Naboo's previous king, Ars Veruna. He's told upon leaving to give the chief's regards to Hego Damask, whom we, as the audience, know at that point is the alter ego of Darth Plagueis. Yeah, Plagueis is alive during the Phantom Menace. We're getting to that. This plants seeds of doubt for Maul that his own master might have a master, and he might perhaps be just a tool of Sidious, not the one Sidious intends to be his true Sith apprentice. This is given further elaboration in the Darth Plagueis novel, as we find Maul being given by Kaisina to Sidious on Dathomir, then follow snippets of his training under Sidious, Sidious finally revealing Maul's existence to Plagueis, and their plans for Maul in the lead-up to the Phantom Menace. Maul is made all the more sympathetic, and his doubts in Endgame ring rather true, given that we now know, thanks to this novel, that Darth Plagueis was alive and well, until right around the time that Maul is being sliced in half during the Phantom Menace. It was Plagueis, as Hego Damask, a wealthy mun who runs Damask Holdings, who provided a great deal of political and financial support behind ventures like the machinations that helped Sidious gain the title of Supreme Chancellor. The two are supposed to discover the secret of eternal life, based on experience carried out by Plagueis, that carry on from his own former master, Darth Tenebris. The two were then, as immortals, to rule the galaxy together, since Sidious, as Palpatine, was to immediately name Plagueis, as Damask, as his co-chancellor. Unfortunately for Plagueis, Sidious had other plans. This does, however, mean that Maul was perhaps always just a tool of Sidious, and there were essentially three Sith during the Phantom Menace. In the end, when Mace asks Yoda who was destroyed, the Master or the Apprentice, we pan over to Palpatine, whom we now can say was himself both Master and Apprentice during the film, Master to Maul and Apprentice to Plagueis, while Maul might well have been the Apprentice of Sidious, or perhaps none of the above, just another pawn of the Sith. Overall, the dynamics of these new stories have made Maul a more sympathetic figure than he has been in the past for Expanded Universe readers. On the issue of Maul's return, there were three notable attempts in the past to bring Darth Maul back from the dead. The first was in 2001's Star Wars Tales No. 9. In a tale called Resurrection by Ron Mars, a doppelganger of Maul is created by the Prophets of the Dark Side to test whether Darth Vader is truly a worthy Sith apprentice. Vader and Maul duel until Vader cuts Maul down by skewering both of them with his lightsaber in one of Vader's most poignant Expanded Universe moments. Since this was a doppelganger, though, not Maul himself, it can still theoretically take place. In 2003, Joe Casey brought us Phantom Menaces in Star Wars Tales No. 17. In this story, Luke Skywalker clashes with a solid-state hologram of Darth Maul that is derived from Maul's disembodied and sustained brain, recovered by mad scientist Drell Kamp. The story reveals that the scientist had recovered Maul's brain and body from Naboo, so if it was ever in continuity, it's either now out, or he has to have gotten Maul's remains in some other fashion at some other point in the timeline. A third story, 2005's Old Wounds from the pages of the non-continuity Star Wars Visionaries, actually comes closest to what we've been given here in the Clone Wars. Maul, with longer horns, a repaired or new double-bladed lightsaber, and cybernetic legs, tracks down Obi-Wan on Tatooine 3 years after Revenge of the Sith to take his revenge. He's killed not by Obi-Wan, but by Owen Lars. Now we have his true return, which is first hinted at in The Wrath of Darth Maul, wherein the prologue, final regular chapter, and epilogue deal with events tied into brothers and revenge. The prologue simply shows Maul's perspective in the sewers and sets up his memories that become the basis for the rest of that biographical tale. The final regular chapter covers the ground found in the latter half of Brothers, but the dialogue and stage direction, so to speak, are slightly different, presumably because author-writer Wyndham was working from an early draft of the script of Brothers, not the finished product, as is often the case with adaptations. One thing found in that chapter that is not in Brothers involves how Maul regains his memories, but I'll hold off on that until next week, just in case Revenge skips over that part of the tale. I'd rather not spoil it, since it's not in the episode that has aired yet. The epilogue is a similar case. I'll detail that portion, which deals with Savage and Maul leaving Lotho Minor for Dathomir, next time. As for the means of his return this time around, we can quote a small portion from The Wrath of Darth Maul to understand how he manages to survive the fall on Naboo. That's a pretty tall reactor shaft. Immediately after Obi-Wan's blade slices through him, this is what The Wrath of Darth Maul describes from Maul's perspective. As he fell, the upper half of his body separated from the lower. No! As his remains tumbled down the generator shaft, he kept his eyes open and fought to remain conscious. But then his head struck the shaft's wall and everything went dark. No! His mind screamed. Despite everything he had learned about death and duty from his master, Maul knew he was not yet ready to die. Not after so many years of training, and with so much more to accomplish. Not so long as he still had so much hatred within him. Obi-Wan ruined me! He willed himself to see. A moment later, his vision returned. The shaft's walls were a disorienting blur. Across the shaft, he sighted his own black-clad legs, scissoring lifelessly at the air as they fell. He struggled to right his torso so he could see downward. Can't die! He fell past an oval shadow, and then a similar shadow raced by, along with a whooshing sound. Air vents. Maul hoped that there was at least one more vent below, that it would be large enough to accommodate his diminished body. He extended his arms, and his left hand's fingertips suddenly burned with friction as they brushed against the cylindrical wall. Must live! Hoping, wishing, praying for one more air vent. Must kill Obi-Wan! He reached out with the Force. As for how he looks, we have no details yet on the growth of his horns, nor how they shrink again next episode, nor how he gets his two-leg bottom seen next episode. We have learned, however, thanks to Star Wars Insider, that the spider legs have a somewhat dubious origin. In an interview with Sam Witwer, the Maul voice actor who is also Starkiller and his clone in The Force Unleashed, quote, "Through all his grief and connection with the dark side of the Force, these spider legs made of garbage have grown out of him as manifestations of his pain." Yeah. As for his American accent, rather than the English one given to the character by Serafinowicz in Episode 1, Witwer says, "I know that Darth Maul has an English accent in The Phantom Menace, but we didn't worry about that because he's been eating garbage for 10 years, and that's going to slightly change the way you talk. But don't worry, we made sure there were moments when he sounds like his old self." I don't really see how what you eat will change how you speak, but at least his babbling in this episode brought the Sith Code, their equivalent of the Jedi Code, into T-canon. For what it's worth, the full Sith Code is, "Peace is a lie. There is only passion. Through passion, I gain strength. Through strength, I gain power. Through power, I gain victory. Through victory, my chains are broken. The Force shall free me." In other continuity, the planet where we first see Savage on the trail of Maul is Stobar. The diner at Stobar's spaceport is Plop Dribbles. No, I'm not kidding. Where the cook is Lubo. The human waitress is Sassy. No, again, I'm not kidding. And the droid waitress is Marwigo. According to the episode guide on StarWars.com, the confrontation that ends up with Savage choking Sassy began when Marwigo had trouble getting Savage's order. She then passed him off to Sassy, who tried to reach out to touch Savage's amulet, prompting him to choke her. Lats Razi is back also this week from last week, of course, albeit briefly, as is voice actor Ben Diskin, who played Krizmo Sodi and Otua Blank last week. This week, he plays the Anacondan, Morley. Now that is a heck of a continuity corner.
So before we wrap this episode up, we are three parts into what has been our kind of four-part final arc. Would you have enjoyed seeing this arc so far in theaters? I know Arnie was kind of wanting that back earlier in the season. So let's see if we're still kind of thinking that. We'll start with Jerry. Would you have liked to see this arc in the theater, Jerry?
Are you referring to these four episodes? Because I would say no, because they're so disconnected. In fact, when the show on Cartoon Network came on, it said, you know, now stay tuned, upcoming, whatever. The two-part finale of the Clone Wars Season 4, or however it worded it. And I was like, you know what? They've even changed their mind. They are recognizing this as a two-part finale. This isn't no longer a four-parter. They're even saying the two-part season finale. So no, these four episodes would have been weird as a movie, because I think you just would have felt like you're watching two separate movies for no particular reason.
I agree with Jerry. I mean, in that these four episodes are not an arc. When, if you look at the opening newsreel for this episode, the entire newsreel is this about the Savage Opress trilogy from last year. It had nothing to do with Asajj and Bounty Hunters and the Night Sisters. If it hadn't been for Dooku saying, now that the Night Sisters are no more, or whatever he says, there would have been zero ties. That said, yeah, I would have liked to have seen these two at once, be it on TV, in a theater. If it had been in a theater in Chicago, I would have gone, but wasn't going to make a flight to LA for it.
All right, and Nathan.
You know, I would say, you know, any excuse to see something Star Wars in theaters is a fun experience, even if I don't particularly enjoy a lot of the theaters around my area. I do enjoy seeing Star Wars in general on the big screen. So would I have gone to see it? Yes. Would these episodes as an arc have made sense to see in theaters together? No. I think you guys hit it right on the head. It's just too disjointed. It's not really a four-part finale. It's essentially a two-part one and then another two-part one. Although, I will say that at least they would have solved one of my big conundrums when I go see a movie in theaters, which is when to go get more snacks and when to take a leak, because I could have done it as Savage was walking all the way across Lotho Minor.
But you wouldn't have, because you'd be sitting there like, well, something's got to happen now. No. Well, I should have gone. But it's too late now because something's going to happen. No, it still hasn't.
Dan, can I amend my answer?
Absolutely.
You know, now that I think about it, and this is a little hard to answer without seeing this fourth or second episode, I bet you almost could have made it work by eliminating last week's episode. If you had 2 weeks ago with the whole Night Sisters getting wiped out and then jumped to this one, knowing or thinking that Asajj Ventress may show up next week, that might have worked.
See, I think they could have taken last week's episode and cut it about in half, and this week's episode, cut it about in half. And then we could have had a three-part story arc for a finale, which would have worked for a trilogy, because we would have seen the Night Sisters get wiped out. And just basing it on, hey, last time we had Clone Wars in the theaters, it was the Night Sister trilogy. I think that that premise would have worked for having it in the theaters as a trilogy again. The Night Sisters are all dead. Savage Opress goes to find Darth Maul. Darth Maul and Savage Opress do mean things to Jedi. The end. I think that could have worked. As this four-parter with these two kind of iffy episodes at the end of last two-parter, the beginning of this two-parter, not so much. All right. Now, as we've kind of discussed, we are down to our last episode. And remember to keep sending us your voicemails for our end of the arc voicemail show. So all that remains is for us all to come back next week and discuss revenge. And we will see if Darth Maul lives up to all of his hype.
Looking forward to it.
See you next time.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2012, all rights reserved.
We are now hot on the heels. Oh, no, we're not hot on the heels yet. I'm sorry.